And she's a sentient patch of haze. Lovely being. Once told me the best way to pickle grapes. It was a fun recipe. Never did try it.
How well do you know Diane Creighton? Jackie pressed.
He laughed, although not at a joke. He laughed because he was happy. Jackie winced, although she could not say exactly what it was that annoyed her.
Great woman. Been working on the PTA with her for years. Never could get her to come around on Invisible Pie, but other than that, we've never had a real difference on anything. We talked a lot lately because she needs someone to talk through the whole Josh thing with, and all that stuff with Troy.
Oh, Jackie said. She failed to make her voice casual or patient.
Who is Troy?
Well, I really shouldn't say, Steve frowned. Not my story to tell and all that.
Hey, so can I see your paper?
Yeah.
He sat down across from her, taking the paper from her hand. He studied it, admired it. His face was so full of excitement it was difficult for him to keep the words in order as they came barreling out of his mouth.
So you know how we're always being watched by agents of a vague yet menacing government agency, right?
Sure.
And how they're linked somehow with the world government.
Hmm?
Well, sometimes I feel like I'm the only person in Night Vale who thinks about this stuff. But have you thought about why the world government is interested in us? Or why there are always lights over the Arby's? Or what those ghost cars are that come roaring down Route 800 late at night at impossible speeds and angles? I don't know why those questions don't eat at other people. Cecil gets downright mad when I ask them.
Oh, yeah?
No one else sees them, but I do. Glowing arrows in the sky, dotted lines, the entire world is a chart, telling you how to understand it if you just look for them.
Cool, sure.
Anyway, so what I think is that the world government was so unwieldy at first that the leaders, green-skinned, yellow-eyed creatures that do not blink and refuse to ever physically look at the world they rule, they got together and split it into 8 committees. And those committees were split into 6 subgroups each. And each of those subgroups had 3 chapters. It was all done to keep things organized. But in this way, everyone lost sight of what they were supposed to be doing.
Jackie had given up even trying to pretend she was paying attention.
Instead of governing the world, the chapters and the subgroups and the committees just bickered with each other over who was in charge of what and which Red Roof Inn the world government holiday party would be held in. And all of their agents no longer understand whose agenda they should be following, let alone have even the smallest idea of what that agenda would look like. So these agents are as vague as their agency, practicing their skills without any direction, but keeping whatever competing committee or chapter or whatever is in the area out of its way, even though they've lost track completely of what they're competing over. What is terrifying, I think, about the world government is not that the world is held under an iron fist, but that the world is sand scooped up in a sieve. The people running it have no more idea than us why there are lights in the sky above the Arby's, or why there are ghost cars. Terrifying, right? I think the grand conspiracy of our world is just an argument between idiots.
Deep breath. Both of them. Jackie had been watching a leaf on a branch outside wave back and forth, almost falling, but not.
And this piece of paper?
Steve held up empty, pinched fingers, attempting emphasis. He looked at his paperless hand. Jackie showed him the paper in her own.
What about it? Jackie asked. What? Oh, I don't know.
He shook his head.
I forget. There are so many things to know, so many things to find out. I lose track of where I am in the maze.
He used his hands to indicate a maze. Think of the common gesture for maze.
The main thing is, he said, is just to enjoy what you have. The paper trick is cool. Do it again.
But she did not.
But definitely, don't go looking for King City, he said. People like to think that there are places other than Night Vale out there, what with all the desert. But it's just not true.
You try to go to a place like King City, you probably would never come back. Steve paused.
I don't think that man has given the paper to the person who was supposed to get it yet, he said.
Oh, yeah? She said, trying to encourage, without seeming too eager.
I think he's looking for one particular person, and he hasn't found them. It's a message, and the message hasn't been received yet, you know? I wonder what happens when whoever is supposed to get that message finally receives it. Could be something very bad. Real bad.
The door opened. Diane walked in. The noise brought Steve back to himself.
Hey there, he said. Your friend Jackie and I were just talking about you. Good things, of course.
Diane glared at the 19-year-old, who returned her glare defiantly.
Not my friend, Steve. Jackie, whatever it is that fascinates you about my life and the people in it, I need you to let go and leave us alone.
Jackie felt herself regarded not as a woman or a human, but as a teenager. She had a rush of anger that felt embarrassingly young, but that she couldn't suppress.
I'm looking after my own life, man. What I want to know is why you always seem to end up involved.
I'm sorry, Diane, said Steve. I didn't know.
It's okay, Steve, said Diane. I know you love a good conversation. Jackie, what are you doing here? Are you researching me? Following me?
You'd love it if you were that interesting. Jackie stood up so quickly that her folding chair tumbled backwards into the popcorn machine. Steve and Diane winced, but nothing visible happened, and so they relaxed. Jackie didn't like how the situation was going, but she also didn't know how to change the momentum. She came right up to Diane's face, like a child fighting on a playground, or like a larger, older child fighting in a bar. Jackie felt unsure and silly and young, and she channeled the discomfort of that feeling into anger and projected that feeling onto Diane.
I already have one sullen teenager in my life. Go home, Jackie.
Jackie felt stupid.
Oh, Jackie, did you ever think of just turning 20?
And so she yelled,
Do you have to show up everywhere I am all the time?
This is the PTA room. I am on the PTA.
Whatever, I'm out of here,
Jackie said, and then pointed at Steve.
Steve, we'll talk more about King City later. Tell Janice I said hi.
Okie doke. It sure was nice to chat.
And he meant it, which was the worst part about Steve Carlsberg. Jackie stormed out of the door, not wanting to leave this way and hating herself for doing it. Diane stared at Steve with new curiosity, wondering if this was the first time she had ever actually wanted to know something that Steve could tell her.
Steve, what do you know about King City?
25. There was a Troy who swept up at the movie theater. There was a Troy who never left his home. There was a Troy who was a therapist. There were so many Troys, and Jackie tracked them all. She had a notebook and a camera, and soon she had a record of every Troy in town. She kept a lot of notes, not because she was good at investigating, but because it gave her something to do, and helped keep her from drifting off into confusion and despair over the terrifying implications of Troy's multiplicity. If she stopped note-taking long enough to think, she would grow dizzy in a spiral of questions. Do they know each other? Are they the same age? Were they all born, or were they just there one day? When she found herself thinking for too long, she would make another note, maybe about how humid it was. Neck feels sticky, even in the shade. Or what color the clouds were. Green with purple stripes. Looks like rain. Today, Jackie was following the Troy who was a loan manager at the last bank of Nightvale.
We put our customers second and our apocalyptic prophecies first.
This Troy had very regular hours. not just at his work, but in his life outside of work, and so he was especially easy to tail. It was the third hour of work for him, and he would be going to lunch soon. Lunch was usually a salad or something light, except for the one day a week he went to Big Rico's Pizza. She watched him through the window, humming and smiling at customers. There was a Troy who drove a cherry red Vespa while wearing a light blue helmet. There was a Troy who drove a 1997 Plymouth minivan. There was a Troy who drove a taxi. Do some of them live together? Are they working on a single plan? Were they artificially created by the government? Too much thinking. She was feeling nauseous. She wrote a note about the lunchtime crowd in the street. It's lunchtime. There's a crowd in the street. Troy was eating at his desk today. Salad. He did nothing unusual with the salad. He ate it. She watched him eat it from her car. No one cared about a woman staring through binoculars from a parked car. It was a common sight. There were three other cars with binoculared watching women just on that block, and that was light by Night Vale standards. She hadn't been able to get Troy to stop and talk to her. They always avoided her, most not with the same sprinting desperation as the Troy who worked at the Moonlight all night, but with the same result. Not a single Troy would get close enough for her to ask questions. She had even tried making an appointment with the therapist Troy, but when the time had come, a short, balding man in a vest had been sitting across from her instead. "I'm afraid there's been an illness going around," he said. "He's asked me to cover his clients for a bit. Now, tell me, what do you remember specifically about your childhood?" She had gotten up and walked out without saying a word. She would stay focused. No matter what Diane had said, she was old enough to concentrate and do this. It was probably better that she was young. Her body was stronger and faster. Her mind was more open. Youth was better than age. It was good that she had been young for so long. The next day, the Troy therapist had been back at work. No sign of an illness. But Jackie knew that if she burst into the building, the balding man would be back, asking her about her childhood. There was a Troy who lived in an apartment building near the community radio station. There was a Troy who lived in the housing development of Coyote Corners and collected windowsill cacti. There was a Troy who simply vanished for long periods of time, and so she wasn't sure where he lived. That was the Troy who did lawn care and gardening. She made notes and intentionally breathed. Troy ate his salad. "Eating salad," her note said. "Still eating it." One of the notes was a doodle of a cat. She didn't know how to be an investigator. All she had ever known how to do was run a pawn shop. She looked up and stopped writing in her journal. Troy wasn't eating salad anymore. He was talking to someone. Or he was turning away and shaking his head while someone was trying to talk to him. She couldn't see who it was. Troy got up, tossed the rest of his salad in the trash, and walked quickly out of the bank, still shaking his head. Jackie got out of her car to follow, but stopped when she saw Diane approaching Troy on the sidewalk. Of course Diane was here. Who else could it have been? She watched Diane follow Troy until they turned a corner and were gone. She threw down her notebook and swore. A man in a suit seated on a folding chair next to her car and making notes on her every action winced. "Relax, man," she said, and then cursed again, deliberately, louder than before. There was a Troy who knew what all this was about. There was a Troy whose actions had somehow led to the end of the routine that sustained her. There was a Troy watching her. And now she would watch him until he slipped up, until some part of the mystery was revealed to her, until she understood. When she came the next day to watch the Troy who worked at the bank, he wasn't there. She went in and asked. The woman at the teller's desk stopped chanting, "And thus the world falls, from a book bound in strange leather long enough to tell her that he had resigned last night without giving a reason. But Jackie knew the reason. Another lead lost to Diane. There was a Troy. There was a bunch of them. And one of them would answer to her eventually. The Voice of Night Vale.
I couldn't taste anything at all for weeks afterwards. No one does a dinner party like Earl Harlan.
Folks, I'm pretty excited about this next bit of news. The staff of local advocacy group Citizens for a Blood Space War have put together Night Vale's first ever flea market. This Friday at the Rec Center, craftspeople, artisans, antique trainers and breeders, and cold patches of air indicating the likely presence of a ghost will bring their wares to town. The Last Bank of Night Vale will be the title sponsor of the flea market. There will be plenty of free parking and helicopters monitoring all shoppers from above. The Last Bank Flea Market will also bring in food from some of Night Vale's most popular eateries, like Big Rico's Pizza, Pieces O' Glass, Shame, Tourniquet, and Pinkberry. Admission is $5 and supports our local charity, Citizens for a Blood Space War. The Last Bank of Night Vale will also be offering no-fee checking accounts to those looking to follow local laws, which were recently changed to require every single person to have a checking account at the Last Bank of Night Vale. You can bank wherever you like, as long as you bank at the Last Bank of Night Vale. The City Council would like to remind all citizens to please use proper methods for organizing regular trash and recycling. For instance, recycling must be divided into paper, plastic, feathers, teeth, and glass, each in a color-coded bag. Also, regular trash pickup is every Tuesday and Friday morning, whereas recycling is taken from your home at unannounced intervals. You will know recycling has been picked up because your recycling bags will be gone and there will be a large reddish-brown smear across your front door, roughly in the shape of an X. Or maybe it's a cross? It's not clear in the brochure I've been handed, which has no words, only dark black and white photographs of angled shadows along brick walls. I mean, municipal one-sheets are kind of useless, but this one is at least haunting. And now, let's have a look at traffic. There is a man with a gray pinstriped suit and without a job. He is sitting on the hood of his nice car, looking at other cars as they go places. He is not going anywhere. He knows that now. All this time he had lived for the future. The future had been the firm ground he stood on, and the present was only the slight haze in the air. But now he understood that the future was a joke without a punchline, and that whatever he had in the present was what he would have always. He did not have much in the present. He had a very nice car. He called someone. It doesn't matter who. It was his lover. They called each other that. It was the name they preferred. It didn't matter to them what anyone else thought of the word. "Where are you?" his lover said. "They said you didn't come in." "Yeah," he said. "Are you okay? Are you hurt? When are you coming home?" Was he hurt? He stopped to consider this. He didn't think so. He examined his body. He took off his suit and his silver watch, laid them in the dirt, and stood there with his phone, naked, looking at himself. No, he wasn't hurt, he thought. Not physically. He opened his mouth to answer, but looking up he saw something in the sky. It was a planet of awesome size, lit by no sun. An invisible titan, all thick black forests and jagged mountains and deep turbulent oceans. It was so far away that he couldn't be sure he was even seeing it, and yet it felt more real and more present to him than the cars driving on the highway below him. He hung up without answering, which was, in its own way, an answer. He looked up. He couldn't see the planet anymore. He put his suit back on. He picked up his watch. It was covered in dirt. He got back in his car and drove. This has been Traffic. And now a word from our sponsors. Or not now, but later. Much later. You won't know it when it happens. It'll be just one of many words you'll encounter that day. But it will come leaden with unseen meaning and consequence. And it will slowly spread throughout your life, invisibly infecting every light moment with its heaviness. Our sponsors cannot be escaped. You will see their word, and you will never know. 26. When the phone rang, Diane flushed. That morning she was at work, but she was not working. She was looking up information about King City on her computer. It seemed like a normal enough place. A highway, some restaurants, houses, probably filled with people who have dreams and wishes and nightmares and crippling doubt and feel things similar to or exactly like love. Diane was making broad assumptions based on the small amount of data that was her entire life. She was lost in her research, face close to the screen. When the phone rang, she closed her browser and opened a spreadsheet, out of instinct. Her face felt warm, and she pressed her office phone to her ear. "Can you come in here, Diane?" "Sure, Catherine." "Everything okay? You sound out of breath." "I'm fine." Diane remembered to exhale. Catherine's door was open, but Diane knocked anyway. Catherine turned around in her desk chair and cut a line through the air with her upturned palm. "Sit, please," her hand said. Diane sat. The tarantula was perched in Catherine's thick, wavy hair. It wasn't moving much. A slight stretch of a front leg every so often. Catherine, from time to time, would scratch the side of her head with a letter opener. The tarantula would change position by an inch or so to avoid being hit. Catherine had felt her scalp itch all morning. She thought about the qualities of various shampoos, whether she was using the correct brand. She thought about the dry air here in the Southwest desert. She did not think about the tarantula hanging from her hair, because she did not know about the tarantula hanging from her hair. Had she known at all that there was a tarantula in her hair, Catherine might have behaved in a surprising and unsafe manner. The tarantula had no idea where it was or what was happening. It felt movement from time to time, and it would, in turn, move carefully to accommodate for a possible predator or possible prey. The tarantula knew about hunger and gravity. "Diane, I'm troubled by something," Catherine said. "Someone was in my office the other night. I'm not accusing you of snooping around in my office the other night after work. But what were you doing snooping around in my office the other night after work?" She slapped the desk with her palm, and Diane jumped. The tarantula did not react visibly. Diane regularly lectured Josh about trust, and now she had violated her boss's trust in much the same way. "Just be honest," she told herself. "Be honest and accept the consequences." "I might have looked in here, yes," she said. "You might have looked in here?" "Yes." Catherine sighed and put her hands together. At that moment, the tarantula put its front legs together, but the timing was coincidental.
Why might you have looked in here, Diane?
Diane started to talk about Evan McIntyre, but Catherine waved her words away.
Entering my office without my permission was inappropriate behavior. We can agree on that, right?
Diane hated this. She hated being talked to in the way she talked to Josh. Except she was right when she talked that way to Josh, and Catherine was right in what she was saying now. But still, it was awful to receive. She understood how Josh felt being talked to like this, whether the reasons were good or not.
Yes. I'm sorry, Catherine. We can't have people behaving inappropriately. The office is not a place for inappropriate behavior. This is a place for appropriate behavior, right?
She was right, and Diane told her so.
Diane, I need you to leave the office. You're not fired or anything. We never fire anyone here. Let's call it a permanent unpaid leave while I consult the relevant agencies.
Diane couldn't make herself believe what was happening, even as she completely understood it. Her life was changing here in front of her, so casually and in a few simple words.
You know there are relevant agencies, yes?
Said Catherine.
Yes. There are always relevant agencies. I'm sorry, I just got carried away. You can go now.
Catherine scratched at her hair again. The tarantula moved again. Diane stood up, still staring down.
I'm sorry, Catherine. Close the door on the way out.
Diane did. As the door shut, she could see Catherine scratching her head vigorously with the letter opener, her teeth gritting and neck wrinkling with tendons and veins. The tarantula, having apparently had enough, dropped down to the desk behind her. Diane gathered up her belongings as unnoticeably as she could. She wanted to look like she was just leaving for lunch, which in one sense was all she was doing. She just was never going to come back. It wasn't until she was outside that the gulf of what had happened opened up inside her. She didn't even like this job, but she didn't dislike it. It was a large part of her life, and now that part of her life was over. She felt adrift, but also she felt hungry. The hunger was unrelated, but it became tied up in all her other feelings. After a quick stop to use the ATM at the last bank of Nightvale, Diane walked toward the missing frog salad bar. She wasn't sure if she wanted salad or not, but they also served richer fare like bowls of capers and orange milk. She just needed to clear her mind, and if that meant eating something a bit heavier, so be it. It took her a moment, but she realized that the man down the block from her was Troy, wearing a dark suit. He had a shoulder bag and a burgundy and silver tie, and was absently looking at his phone as he came toward her. It made her furious, her life coming apart around her, let go from a job where she had always been quiet and responsible and respected, and her son at a distance that had never existed between them before. And here was Troy, in yet another guise, walking down the streets of her city like he belonged here, like he had just as much right to be here as she did. She walked faster, not sure what she was going to do next. Just a few feet away, Troy glanced up. She could not tell if he saw her or not. His upward glance turned quickly to his watch. He stopped, and in one complete gesture, like a short modern dance, he looked from his watch to the street signs while pivoting his body in the opposite direction, a complete movement phrase that told the story of a man who was late and accidentally walking down the wrong road. She followed him, thinking about what she would like to do to him, and also about what she was actually going to do to him. When she had difficulty catching up to him, how fast was he walking? She was practically running now. She called out, "Troy!" As she said this, a car revved nearby, the driver grinding the wheels over the concrete, a great screech, a tiny puff of smoke, and burning rubber stench that hid her shout. Diane looked at the car and the dark black marks and the thin white puffs of smoke. The driver was Jackie Fierro. Of course, Jackie would be lurking, always watching. Jackie was swearing and looking past Diane down the street. When Diane looked back to where Jackie was looking, Troy was already lost in the lunch crowd. And it was at that moment that she knew there was only one other possible option. She needed information, and she couldn't use the resources at work anymore. There was that shame shuddering through her again. It was time to go to the library. The library would have records on Troy Walsh. Diane had survived librarians before. She and Josh had gone on many quests to the Nightvale Public Library, as well as the less treacherous but still life-threatening libraries at Josh's schools. She drove home and grabbed the things she would need to check out a book. Strong rope and a grappling hook, a compass, a flare gun, matches, and a can of hairspray, a sharpened wooden spear, and, of course, her library card. She couldn't remember exactly, but she made a silent prayer that she had no outstanding fines. She put on all blue clothing. It was widely known that librarians could not see the color blue. This was probably just an urban legend, but Diane was willing to do anything to put the odds more in her favor. On her bed, she spread out four different maps of the library. She noted the inconsistencies in each map, trying to determine which paths were truth and which were certain death. All four maps indicated that the European history section was located on the second floor, northeast corner. But Diane knew this to be untrue, as there had only ever been one book of European history ever written, and it was a pamphlet about the small country of Switz, and it had been lost to a fire during last year's Book Cleansing Day festivities. The pamphlet was not meant to be burned, but it had a picture of a giraffe on the cover, the national tall mammal of Switz, and the book cleansers mistook the giraffe for a handgun. A giraffe can look a lot like a lot of things to someone wearing a hazardous materials uniform and a welder's mask, so the mistake was understandable. Without that book, there couldn't possibly be a European history section anymore. She threw the maps out as obvious forgeries. Realizing she wouldn't know what to do with them even if they were needed, she tossed the pile of supplies and makeshift weapons as well. She would have to go off memory and instinct. Mothers of teenagers are good in libraries. They are wise and attentive from their years of experience, and they are unrelenting and fearless because of their focus on a good education for their kids. Before getting in her car, Diane stopped by Josh's room. That day, he was a desk lamp. "Josh, I love you. I just wanted to tell you." "What? Where is that coming from?" He was a vase full of sunflowers now. "Nothing. Just saying that I love you." "I love you too," he said, his petals cocked to the side in wary confusion. "Everything'll be fine," she added, not knowing at all if everything would be fine. 27. Jackie pulled the supplies from her car. The parking lot of the library was otherwise empty, as it usually was. The entrance to the public library was through an unassuming pair of glass doors that said "Push." Above that, a blue plastic sign said, "Nightvale Public Library." That was all. The dramatics of its reputation were not echoed in its architecture. She took a breath, and then another. Each one was a moment in which she was still breathing and not inside the library. The building itself was squat, with tall windows that looked onto an empty checkout area and a tiled area with drinking fountains and a bathroom. Everything was quiet and still. There was no sign that anything had ever lived there. It had the feeling of a tomb, or a shopping mall that had run out of money before the first store opened. She pushed through the doors. Inside, the air was cool and dry. She listened carefully. Nothing. The doors led to a long entrance hallway ending in another pair of double glass doors. Off the hallway were various reading rooms for reading, and community rooms for communing, and bloodletting rooms for a different kind of communing. Those were also empty and quiet. Jackie traversed the entrance hall in silence. The only sign of her movement was her shadow through the bands of sunlight on the floor. She passed a bulletin board advertising community events. Pumpkin picking competition? 3 objects. Do you know which one is a pumpkin? Garage sale. Everything's free. Mostly not dangerous. Some dangerous. You'll find out which. I'm hiding somewhere. Can you find me? No, not there. Oh well, you'll find me soon. I promise. Stuff like that. With tabs where the phone numbers could be taken and reported to local government agencies or the sheriff's secret police. The flyers all looked to be at least 10 years old. They were brittle and warped and barely hanging off rusted thumbtacks. No movement ahead of her. No movement behind her. She put her hand on the push bar of one of the inner doors, but paused when she heard footsteps behind her. What person would brave this sterile tomb? Besides her, of course. Jackie turned and found herself inches away from Diane, who was looking down at her phone. Ah! Jackie shouted. Diane looked up, her eyes wide. Ah! Diane shouted as well. Her fingers were scarred, and her phone had traces of blood on it. She must have tried to contact a forbidden number. Hello, Jackie. Did you follow me here? Of course not. Then why are you everywhere I am at the exact same time as me? Diane thought about that. It was a fair question. Although the problem with fair questions is that they are asked about an unfair world. I suspect, Jackie said, that we are looking for the same sorts of things about the same sorts of people, which is why we would keep crossing each other's paths. Also, Nightvale isn't a very big town, is it? I don't know. I never thought about it. They both thought about it. Then, as is safest in Nightvale, they stopped thinking about it. All right, well, cool seeing you, said Jackie, hand on the door, her body blocking Diane's entry. Jackie, as little as I like spending time with you, and I want you to know that even though I am trying to be the adult of the two of us here, because I am the adult of the two of us, I do not like spending time with you much at all. But as little as I like this, the library is a dangerous place. We both know it. And since we both apparently need to go into it, we should do the right thing. And go together. Or words to that effect. Jackie had lost interest around, I am the adult. No, not interest. Patience. Jackie wanted Diane to go home. She did not need another parent any more than Diane needed another child. Diane knew the girl needed help. Diane lowered her face, keeping eye contact and giving a slight grin. Something that usually worked when Josh was acting sullen or distant. Jackie turned her head and looked through the doors into the empty checkout area, a fake velvet rope marking where the line would go if there were any people alive in there, and beyond that, the shelves of dangerous books. Jackie did not feel fear, but she was aware of herself. She knew that it wasn't healthy, what she was doing. Okay. Fine, Jackie said. Okay, fine what? Okay, you can come. So, just to be clear, we're in this together. Yeah, man, fine, whatever. Come on, Jackie said without looking back. Diane went in first, Jackie holding the door. By the door was the return slot for books, or for anything else a person might want to return to the library. Jackie, being who she was, lifted up the metal lid for a moment just to see. Inside it was dark and damp, and there was an intermittent crackling or crunching sound. Diane shuddered and, putting her hand over Jackie's, gently closed the lid. Jackie pulled her hand away from Diane's and kept walking. The checkout area had printers and computers that looked to be 20 or more years out of date. Nothing like the cutting-edge machines regularly released into local computer stores and immediately outlawed by city council. There were stains of indeterminate origin all over the counter. Jackie touched one. It was still sticky. The stain ran in a sloppy streak across the counter and up a pencil holder. Jackie rose up on tiptoes and peered into the cup, which at first appeared empty. But the longer she stared into the small darkness, the more she could make out a pattern or texture at the bottom. She could not be certain, but there seemed to be a small lump of wet hair in the bottom of the pencil holder. She lowered herself back onto her heels. "What are you here for?" Jackie asked. "Public records. You?"
"Newspaper archives."
"Good. Should be right next to each other."
"Sure, I guess."
According to Diane's most trustworthy map, the archives were about halfway back into the library.
"Well, good thing is we don't have to go all the way to the back," she said.
Jackie didn't reply. They kept moving past the racks of the Night Vale Daily Journal by the windows. Due to spiraling printing costs and the necessary layoff of nearly its entire staff, the journal had long ago moved to an imagination-based format. The racks were empty except for a small note reminding you that if you imagined what a hypothetical Night Vale newspaper might look like, then you needed to send a check for $19.95 to the Daily Journal to cover your monthly imagination subscription. The library was shaped like a stubby lowercase B, with the entrance hall and checkout area forming its neck. Ahead was the start of the lower portion, where the bulk of the library was. First was the reference section, with thick books full of dangerous words and binders full of classified information. The shelves of the reference section spanned back into the shadows of the deepest parts of the library, and the two women made an immediate left to avoid it. Diane kept her eyes forward, following the unwavering trajectory of her steps. But Jackie couldn't help but stop and look. Deep within the shadows, she thought she could see the echo of movement. Not exactly movement, but the suggestion left in the air after movement is finished. She hurried after Diane. As they passed a section of geological encyclopedias, Jackie saw a scattering of white teeth in the aisle. She stared at them, hoping they would become something less awful, less human-looking, but the teeth remained teeth. After that, she kept her eyes forward, mimicking Diane. Beyond the reference section was the large central reading area, sloping gently downward to a fountain. The fountain was out of water, had probably broken years ago, and no repairman had survived trying to fix it. It occasionally made a buzzing, growling, hacking sound, like its pipes were trying to cough something up. Around the fountain were oak tables with upholstered chairs. These had never been touched. Crossing an open area like the reading area was guaranteed to draw every librarian in the building, so any hypothetical reader would never get 10 steps, let alone all the way to pulling out a chair and sitting down. The reading area was a beautifully crafted trap set by the librarians. But it was too perfect. Even the dumbest book lover, and anyone who would regularly choose to come in contact with books, could not be a bright bulb. Jackie thought, wouldn't fall for this. Diane and Jackie hugged the edge of the reading area, crouching behind the public internet access tables, served by the same ancient computers as the checkout area, none of which appeared to be plugged in anyway. They looked at each other, faces pale but focused. Without speaking or breathing, but with the urgent set of their jaws, they communicated that they needed to keep moving. The answers might be available on the old computers, but it would be too dangerous to wait around in one spot trying to retrieve them. Even leaving aside the usual danger that any computer might develop a spontaneous and malicious sentience, like what had wiped out the entire computer science department at Nightvale Community College. After the computers was the children's section. The beanbag chairs were new, as were the realistic lava stone statues of children. The section had no books at all, but it did have 20 or 30 child statues, with faces contorted in terror and pain. It was the one part of the library everyone in Nightvale could feel good about. "Well, at least we have those statues," they'd say to each other. "The library might be a threat to the lives of all who use it, but it has a great children's section and comfy beanbag chairs. At least there's that." said the fountain. Diane paused for a moment to look at the statues. One of them looked a lot like Josh, back when he was younger, and used to be made of stone sometimes. He was rarely ever made of stone anymore. Did she have any pictures of him made of stone? No, she didn't think she did. She should take more pictures of him, or try to remember him better, or remember more of him, assuming she would make it out of the library. "Why are we stopping?" Jackie hissed. She looked around the children's section for movement or shadows, but it seemed as empty as everywhere else. Diane shot Jackie a silent look that said, "Shut up." "Then let's go," Jackie replied with her own silent look. "Patience. Have some patience. I was simply seeing what the new children's section was like. I've heard a lot of good things about it. Besides, it wasn't like we weren't dawdling earlier at the front desk." Diane argued with just her eyes. "That was different. It was different. Just, dude, keep moving." Jackie countered wordlessly. "I'm moving. This is me moving." Diane moved. Jackie glared, but Diane didn't see it happen, so the glare only had an effect on herself. They were almost to the city archives, but to get there, they would have to cross from under the computer desks into the space between the children's and the architecture and science sections. Diane held back, taking in the apparent emptiness of the room, preparing for what might happen next. But Jackie was already out and running for the microfiche shelves. Diane gasped, unable to grab Jackie to protect her from her own bravado. Jackie, all teenage breathlessness, broke her run on the archive cabinets with a dull slap and whirled around, arms out, eyes wide, ready to take what would come. Nothing. Diane held her breath. No one. See? No one. Jackie's grin was edging toward smug, but Diane had developed a patience for this kind of thing from years of her son. She scuttled over in a crouched position from her hiding place under the desk, standing only when she made it to the cabinet. They put their backs to the archives and looked at where they had come from. Children's section, then computers, then reference section, then the turn toward the checkout, and escape. If they needed to run, they wouldn't make it. So they would just have to not be found.
"All right, what are you looking for?"
Jackie mouthed, trying to whisper without sound.
"Troy,"
Diane mouthed. Jackie made a face.
"It's for Josh's sake,"
Diane mouthed.
"What?"
Jackie mouthed. Diane wasn't sure if Jackie had not understood or was expressing incredulity. Either way, she waved her off. Finding information on any citizen of Night Vale was as simple as looking under their name and sorting through the comprehensive life details kept on record. And there he was. Walsh, Troy. Between Voss, Natalie, and Winged Creature. First name unknown. Here was his birth certificate, with everything but his name redacted. His death certificate, postdated to the correct time. A cool rock that someone had found and had written Troy on with a black permanent marker. Blood samples, urine samples, saliva samples, writing samples, fingerprints, photos taken while he was sleeping, a paragraph-length poetic description of his aura, a video of the same description presented through the language of dance. Diane shook her head. Nothing unusual or useful. Jackie placed a hand on her shoulder, patient as she could, and squeezed gently, trying to convey all of, "That's cool, but there's nothing. Sorry you came all this way and wasted your time. Let's go." Diane poked a finger at her, but then reconsidered and lifted the defensive gesture into a plea. "Just one more moment," her finger asked. "Whatever." Jackie crossed her arms and returned her bored stare to the empty room behind them. Diane searched through the whole file again, flicking quickly, looking for whatever it was she had missed, because surely she had missed something. A fluorescent light flickered on the high gray ceiling above them. Jackie squinted. She hadn't seen anything. That had been nothing, she was sure. The fountain. But was that a noise hanging on for just a moment after the fountain's moan? Jackie turned and put her hand back on Diane's shoulder. "We need to go." Diane looked out over the reading area. It looked no different than it had the last time she had looked, or anyway, almost no different. "Why don't you just do whatever it is you need to do and let me do this? I'm sure you'll be fine on your own." She had adopted a mom's voice, and they both heard her do it. Jackie gave one last look to where the noise had come from, which, as far as she could tell, was the magazine room in the complete opposite corner of the library. The angle was such that she couldn't see into the room. She might have been able to see the shadow jutting out on the floor from its doorway, but she didn't want to see that, so her brain skimmed past it. One aisle over, Jackie found the archives of the Daily Journal, back when it had had physical form. She started flipping through the binders of old issues. A microfiche system had been deemed too expensive by city government, and anyway would likely have just been ruined by librarian fluids or the blood of one of their victims. King City has to have come up at some point. Diane said. She wasn't listening because she had found something she'd missed earlier. Stuck to the back of the aura report was an old photo. She couldn't tell how old because it was stuck image side down. She picked at the edges of it, trying to get it to come off, but the photo was stuck firm. "Damn it," Jackie said, not in response to anything, but just to have something to say as she searched, tediously, for information that might or might not exist. Diane yanked at the photo, and it came unstuck with a pop. She turned it face up. It was a photo from the era where people are stiffly arranged through the long minutes it took to register their image on chemical paper. She considered it as carefully and rationally as she could, before coming to the verbal conclusion, "Oh, shit." "Why, oh, shit?" Jackie popped her head up from behind a binder. Diane held up the photo, and Jackie studied it closely, bringing her face in toward the flat faces looking back from long ago. "Oh, shit," Jackie said. "Yeah." "Well, my news isn't great either." Jackie held up an index card that said, in neat block letters, "All materials on King City have been cataloged under geography. Forbidden." And then another sentence that had been blacked out with a scribbled marker. so much so that the black ink leaked through to the other side of the card. Diane nodded, unsurprised. It had seemed too easy up to that point, and so she had been expecting something like this. "The forbidden material shelf is just past the biography section, near fiction," she pointed. The area where she pointed was as far from them as the entrance, in the opposite direction. There would be no escape if they were noticed. They both considered this. Jackie sat down on institutionally patterned carpet, her head in her hands, and allowed herself a few seconds of self-pity. Then she stood up, her eyes steady on her destination. "Listen, Diane," she said softly, clearly. "It made sense for us to do this together because we both need something. But you can go now. You found..." She looked again at the photograph in Diane's hand and shuddered. "Anyway, you have a son who needs you. You have to go home to him. I can do this." Diane thought about Josh, and she wanted to agree. The important thing was to get out of the library to her family, her sullen, solitary teenage family. And so she felt furious about what she was going to say next. "No. We came into the library together. We're going to leave it together. Diane, you don't have..." "Jackie, if I left you here and you died, I would feel bad about it. I'd probably feel bad about it for the rest of my life, and I don't like to feel bad. So, let's go." Jackie smiled. She didn't mean much by it, but she meant some by it. Diane smiled back, meaning mostly the same. She looked at Troy's useless file and shrugged, deciding to take it with her. There wasn't much to it, and they had come this far. She tucked it under one arm. They started out for the forbidden shelf, past the biography section and, terrifyingly, the fiction section near it. Nothing attracts a librarian more than fiction, as even the smallest child of Night Vale knows. "I hope there is anything there about King City," Jackie said. The fountain said. This time, there was definitely another noise along with it. Like a laugh, but angry. Like crying, but aggressive. Like a claw, or a tail, or a wing moving against bookshelves. Diane and Jackie didn't hear it, although there was nothing they could have done differently if they had. The Voice of Night Vale. Or anyway, all of them that had survived. And that is why police and emergency medical crews no longer feel obligated to search for remains in any public library. We are getting confirmation from several concerned citizens that something is very wrong with those cute plastic flamingos everyone bought from Lenny's Bargain House. Those who get too close to the flamingos, or worse, touch them, are disappearing. Some of these unfortunates appeared again just moments later, sagging into shriveled skin with long gray hair as though a lifetime had passed. "Oh, I'm back! I'm back!" those people all said. "I thought I'd never see this place again!" When asked where they had gone, many promptly died of old age. Others have not reappeared at all. Even those who were lucky enough not to disappear still reported odd side effects of the flamingos. "Yeah, I touched one," said Sheila, the woman who always marks people's activities down on her clipboard at the Moonlight All Night. "And the world shone clear for the first time in my life. Like I had never seen any of it before. I had never seen any of it before, and I understood none of it. which is when I realized that I had become myself as a baby again. I lived my entire life over again, making the same choices, surviving the same tragedy, and surviving the same joy, and going through all the same mistakes, unable to stop myself until I reached the moment again where I touched the flamingo, and then I was an infant again.